You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. Dwayne.
Hey.
Niall.
Froppy, Froppy, Froppy.
And it's me, Brian. This week we look at anime from the week of the 19th of June to the 25th of June, with a single exception being Bono Bono. So we start off with Laughing Salesman, Episode 12, King of the Chat Room, / Japan Overseas Trip. And I have to say, I was not expecting to see Ghost in the Shell standalone complex parody in Laughing Salesman.
Me neither.
But there we
are. What was it that, or was it just like so? That's the only way you can film that kind of scene.
It's very close to that episode.
Okay.
Yeah.
And of course, you got the laughing man, laughing salesman.
Oh yeah,
joke
yeah.
You can make as well. So we've got a guy who's always being goaded into losing his cool on the internet by this one particular person in the chat room. If only there was some way he could get back at him. Well, turns out there is, with a USB stick in the shape of Mogoro, which has got special software which brings up personal details of anybody you search into. What's the search engine called?
Saboogaloo or something like that.
Something like that, yes.
Yeah, I was the back of it was shaped like him, so I figured he was going to like have to turn it around at some stage, you know, because you put it in backwards, it's like, oh, flip it around, it works again. And I thought he was going to boom him when he flips it around or something.
Nah,
I don't know
already.
Why. No, I know.
He dons him through the power of the internet.
Yeah. This is great. He doesn't even need to leave the bar to do his evil deeds anymore now.
Okay, you know he was the guy griefing him, right? That's got to be it.
But no, it shows some other guy in his a computer suite with his throne and his cape. Yeah. I think he actually dresses that way, the same as his online avatar.
Oh, maybe that's how Mogoro was ruining his life, by helping out his greatest internet rival.
Two for one.
Yeah, it's a pretty simple thing. The comeuppance is that every time he logs into a chat room, all his personal details appear for everyone else to see.
All his, like, it's like his driver's license and his like, pictures of him and that kind of thing.
Credit card, like,
Oh, what he spends his shit on, Because they're talking about, oh, you like dietary supplements. Mm.
You can never use the internet again.
Well, we're better off, like, I think so.
This was, you know, a little bit of a low-hanging fruit for Mogoro, because, you know, this guy's, like, notorious, the guy who hangs around chat rooms is obsessed with kind of getting the petty slights. What do you think is going to happen when you give this guy access to everybody's, you know, personal information at the front touch of a button? Like, of course he's going to go fucking hog wild and start wrecking people's lives in his own
But he does do it straight away, even though Mogoro said, what was the stipulation? Like, don't... only troll someone if they're trolling you, kind of thing, or something.
I forget. Only if he's like backed into a corner and about to. Like,
Only if you're being attacked, I think. Yeah, something like that. Which is kind of like, your man just went straight away. It's like, oh, fucking all everyone's personal shit. I'm gonna make everyone log out of this chat room and have no fucking friends. What is your what's your end game here, bro? Just power, I suppose.
And then the second half is an episode I wished I wasn't making my dinner while I was watching it, because what I did see of it, I was like, this is the best story in terms of animation they've done.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, it's a really good looking one, because the thing of it's really simple, but just so many freaky shots of his mouth.
I looked it up, and it's this episode was written, storyboarded, and directed by the overall series director. So
Okay.
That kind of explains why it did everything perfectly that the series has been attempting to do.
Yeah.
And someone she even starts beating up Mogoro at the end.
Yes. So what's it? That's like a office lady who dreams of going on like an overseas trip somewhere fancy and nice, and she wants to just get out of her humdrum life. Well, that's the story she kind of tells Mogoro, because she's getting flack from her family point, saying, well, you gotta find a man and settle down. And it's like, yeah, but what, I'd rather find myself somewhere else away from this boring country, somewhere far off and exotic. That seems like a noble thing to do, but she has an ulterior motive for wanting to go on a fancy holiday.
Yeah, he's trying to push it all down. He's like, is that what you really want? Because I can give you what you want, but you need to tell me specifically what you're after here. Which is that she wants to find a hot foreign dude.
Yes.
Yeah.
To be her holiday boyfriend or maybe her permanent boyfriend?
I think it's because she thinks she doesn't stand out in Japan. So, but if she goes abroad, she'll stand out.
She'll be an interesting foreigner.
Yes.
Yeah.
But this month-long trip overseas is going to take place in Tokyo. Because you can see the world.
I feel like there's a wordplay we're missing out on. But yeah,
possibly.
No, I don't know. It's like, you know, probably you certainly wanted to go to, like, you know, and eat French food in Paris, but he was like, I can order as good as a fancy best French restaurant in town.
And also, I appear to have hired a male prostitute for you as well.
Yeah, here, you two go have a good time.
Like named Mephisto or something.
It is, yes.
So,
he is like Master Mephisto or something like that.
Yeah.
Mephisto,
what was the bit with the shot at the end that looks like she's been like kidnapped by this guy or something?
And I think it's like some sort of something's happened. Her
like scandal.
Ship went down because like her face is blanked out and his face is like, well, known suspect is this and this guy. We only have a picture of him from the back of the head. Picture of Moguru as he leaves the fucking country to get out of Dodge.
And who was the old guy in the queue? Was he from this episode or another episode?
Oh, it wasn't the train guy, was it?
That's what I thought, was it the train guy? Because the camera definitely stops on this other guy who's in the queue to get a plane.
Oh, shit.
Well, in fact, next episode, Moguro is, like, on the plane, and this poor sap is just, you know, snoozing in the seat next to him, and he somehow ruins this guy's life.
Well, that's the thing. Is there a next episode? Or was this the last episode? I think people were saying this was the last episode. Let me see what the website says. I never looked to see if there's a next episode preview on this show. Because I assume that he's done all he can possibly do in the episode. He's not going to come back and do something else.
Well, it will kind of stack up with, you know, the director's decision that they're coming in and doing one of these himself right at the very end.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
And it's kind of him leaving the country. So that would be funny if they decide. Yes, if he just goes ruins lives abroad.
There are surely salary men who need lives ruining abroad. Yeah.
Italian chapter. Singapore side story.
This episode was pretty great. It had a lot of the great bits. I think one of my favorites was all the horrible close-ups of his teeth just clacking together like a fucking skeleton or something. And the bit where he's chasing her down the street without moving quickly, like a fucking nightmare or something.
Well, the truck or car will pass by, and then he just kind of teleported ahead. It's like,
He's just doing his general plodding walk, but he's catching up to her like in those kind of cuts. It's really nice. Oh dear.
And that's a kind of creepy staring. You know, actually, he's doing his creepy stare, and then like he's saying,
"Everyone's reacting to it. Like, don't stare at me like that." And she's batting him off ineffectively throughout the episode. That's pretty good.
Some good faces in this one. I gotta come back and scoop up a few more of them.
I like the interchangeable office ladies as well. The way they all react to her news like exactly the same. By raising their arms higher and higher.
I feel like any of the office worker stories, they've all seemed to be working in the same office because it all looks like it's the exact same.
That's probably like the thing. I imagine all the offices or any place with cubicles and stuff is basically the same.
We use all these backgrounds.
If it was exactly the same shots, sure.
But who would know?
Yeah.
It's not Haybot where they're going to point that out to you. Right, next up we go with Gogo Gomachan, and this week it is Rainy Gomachan, in which we get an assortment of things all about the rain. So what happens in this? Oh, the dad and Ashibe forget their umbrellas, and Gomachan goes to take their umbrellas. He imagines how thankful they'll be when they get their umbrellas from this seal. But it turns out dragging the umbrellas through the rain has made them wet on the inside as well.
Mm. It's kind of like Goma trying to help in the rain, but failing in several ways. Yeah.
Yeah, and Dad can't do his work because it's raining, so he's trying to get him to stay, play inside, but all he just carries on thinking of his work. He starts building with the toys.
Gomachan tried to bring in the laundry, but it falls off the balcony onto the garden.
The teacher thinks about how she's going to get home in the rain. Maybe she'll be daring and go home barefoot. And then Tendo shows up. And has he taken all
his... He is so daring. He's taken off all his clothes except for his underpants. Or his speedos, whatever the hell he wears.
Yeah. I think it's his speedos.
He starts dancing with her.
Never needs much prompting to start swimming.
No, not really.
Those are all fine, but the clutch one is the return of the mysterious fucking flasher, we're going to say, in the trench coat.
He's definitely a flasher now, because that's what he did.
Because the girls are walking the Chinese restaurant outside, and it's like, oh, it's raining, I gotta go home. And this guy's walking by. He whips his coat off and throws it, and runs on the street. It's like, what the fuck happened there? But it lands on, what's the one on the red dress called again?
The one with the buns. I can't think of her name.
Let me go.
She kind of wraps it around herself, and it's like, wow, so thoughtful of that pervert to hand me his trench coat.
Yeah. That seems like, because it was implied in the other episode that her one true love is this fucking flasher.
Yes.
And apparently that's the fucking case.
Who is this mysterious gentleman by this
insane stranger?
Liang Yang, I think her name is.
Okay.
Yeah. What else is there? They try and forecast the weather by tossing a shoe in the air. But instead...
So this guy is Goma as a shoe so they can cheat.
Yes, and then Ashibe throws... I was like, that seems incredibly cruel. But
and the dad comes out and is like, oh, I'll join you, son, in throwing our pet out into the fucking lawn.
But Goma-chan seems to be into it.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of swimming for him or something. Yeah. I'm not exactly sure what that weird sequence was about.
Gomachan is also up for being strung from the ceiling by a rope as one of those teru-teru bozo things.
Maybe that entire sequence was just head trauma caused by the other things that happen in this episode.
I don't think we see Sugao-kun do with this episode.
No.
Call him now.
I think it ends with the dad having made too much of a house when the rain stops and the sun comes up.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
Yeah, it was all kind of sketches around a similar theme.
Yeah.
Then, bugger me, I forgot to watch Bono Bono.
Oh, no.
Oh, but it's a season finale, Brian.
Oh, no.
This might be the last episode.
Sis has a problem. Okay, tell me what problem Sis had and which Sis it was.
It was the older sister.
It's Sister Dai. Yes. It was the kind of the more uptight one.
And it's pretty much her asking Bono's dad for advice, because you're a parent. Tell me how I can teach Chipmunk to become independent. And I don't know if Bono's dad is fucking with her or is saying stupid things and she's taking it deadly fucking seriously.
Well, that's it.
That's like, definitely what's happening, yeah.
It's like, what's it now? So how do we, like, how do you do this? Oh, we do dad climbing. Dad climbing? Yeah, let him climb all over me. And that's like, oh, I see. Can I cut onto you, recognize you as kind of like a figure like, of support, an alliance, so you can kind of climb on top of you.
He wants him to surpass you, so he's climbing on top of you. That's very deep. And he's like, do you want to give it a go? So she's trying to climb him and that kind of thing. He's asking, she asked, how is Bono going to be independent if he's carrying a seashell? He's like, well, he needs to carry a seashell because he might get hungry. And if he gets hungry, he'll die. And she's like, oh, wow, it's like a really deep metaphor for...
So
like...
insightful. It's like Bono, it's like, you know, embracing, you know, the nature that death comes to us all, and he's being ready at any time. You know, he's actually very mature for his age. Well, I never considered that at all. And what they do together, though, they go and play, go and ride the waves. And Bono said, oh, well, chipmunk can't swim, but I guess maybe he's a bit more independent than I thought. Well, I'll try it too. Can you swim? No, of course not. I can't. Ooh. Well, chipmunk usually rides on Bono's head.
lots of really dumb jokes like that. And I think he explains his... Does he describe it as a thinking position? Or I think Bono recognizes it as Dad's thinking position. But he basically does like a she...
She, oh yeah, that's right.
It's like an equivalent of that. And I couldn't tell if he was taking the piss, but Bono did recognize, like, what are you thinking about, Dad? You know, when he's just standing on a cliff doing that.
Yeah. I like this book, because just seeing two characters who wouldn't normally be interacting with each other.
Characters as well.
Yeah.
Sure.
Like, you see very little of Bono's dad, like, to begin with. And of all people, invited when one sister died. You know, it's just there comes some manner of accord, though, so I guess that's impressive.
It's similar to that other episode that was pretty much just the two characters talking. What was it? It was Chipmunk and... I can't remember. There was another one where it was just two characters. It's like, yeah, we get their personality types, so put them together and comedy fucking ensues. It was quite good.
Mm. Ah, yes. Well, with a cap off the season, this is a whole other season.
There's
a whole other season.
I've watched ahead on some of these ones, but I see there's another episode 12 in season 2 appears to have a thumbnail which is exactly the same as a scene we've seen previously. That sort of jagged drawing of Bono getting angry at Fishing Cat. So presumably Fishing Cat is teasing him at some point.
Yeah.
Right, I did watch, however, Makaruna Akuno Gundan, episode 12, which apparently had no
Untitled.
Where they played the ending theme for the entire episode.
I got a little tired of that, unfortunately, because I actually quite like that ending theme, but when you hear for 5 minutes straight, it's a little less charming.
They introduced a new character... in the last episode, discovered who burnt down the UFO. And, kind of left it hanging as a setup for whenever it comes back.
Mm.
And the new character is that cat girl who apparently, that robot we've seen is not really explained, but seems to follow her around.
Her assistant, maybe? Because he has assistants. So.
Yeah, she's both the idol of Venus, isn't she?
Yeah,
they say,
and also a space cop.
Space cop,
and she breathes
and she
fire.
She wants them to pay their ticket for the parking their spaceship
UFO.
Illegally.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she sneezed because Earth has pollen and burnt down their spaceship, and yet she doesn't have to fucking pay for that.
the dark-eared dog man is torn between paying the fine and not paying the fine, because he's a big fan of hers.
Yeah, he's been to her concerts. She's very good.
I want to pay a ticket because I really like her and I want to, do something that'll make her happy. But if I pay a ticket, then she'll leave. So what do I do?
Act like a jerk. I think that'll work.
I think they agreed to pay back in like a yen a day or something ridiculous. But...
yeah.
So it's just going to be like money-making schemes if this one comes back, which I'm fine with, by the way.
That's what the rest of what we're doing anyway, to begin with.
And it somehow ends up with a chase of every single character we've seen so far.
That and a couple of random people who are just like, is this the queue for the con kind of thing? It's like, no, motherfucker, why are you following me?
I was fine with them playing the song all the way through. But I could see it might be great.
It's mostly kind of the whistly part where it goes do 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 because that happens a couple of times in that loop and it's like okay I get it. Now I'm gonna guess that I actually forgot to look it up prior to this, but I'm gonna guess that the actor playing the idol singer space cop character is the same one who wrote the manga that this is based off of.
Yeah,
just gonna guess.
Could be. I thought she might be the narrator. I've not looked. I've made these guesses and then steadfastly refused to check whether that was true or not.
That's the best way, though.
It's Sora Tokiwai is the actress who wrote it and draws it. Yeah, I can't find the page for it.
I can't either now, oddly enough. There's...
Never mind, it will remain a mystery to whenever it comes back. Right.
Never know.
So I assume you're looking forward to more of this, though, right?
Yeah.
Wouldn't mind, yeah. There was some quite nice looking cuts in this one as well.
Yes, yeah.
Especially around the fire and effects and things, you know.
Next up, we've got 100% Teacher Pascal, episode 11, Space Evacuation Drill, Perfect Plate, and what's the hieroglyphics lesson thing called?
Practical Hieroglyphics Lesson.
Ah, it's one word out, right. So, first story is that it's parodying school safety drills like your fire training or doing your fire alarm tests and things like that. And it just takes that idea of a safety drill and then continues to heighten it throughout until the point where they're on the moon.
Yeah, they're standard, like, just keep going with this same joke that pretty much works for them most of the time, yeah.
Yes, yeah, and there's some other jokes in there about like how Pascal can apparently wander around on the moon without a spacesuit, and so can Kanamori Steve.
Well, he's wearing a skin-tight...
Yes.
Spacesuit. I noticed, like, I forgot to mention last time, he was still a demon that episode, but he's not a demon in this one.
No.
Or possessed, I should say. Yeah.
They find some of Pascal's children as well on the moon, apparently.
They just looked like him. They may not be.
They're in the next episode.
Yeah.
Or one of them is. Apparently, they're called, one's called a Pascal Jr. But they've only got one eye.
Yeah. I still have the mustache.
What other drills do they have? Is it like a hole drill?
Yeah, instead of going on ducking under the tables, you have to climb on top of the tables because there's pitfalls or something.
Yeah, pitfall drills.
What to do if a ping pong player just bursts into your classroom?
Yeah, do not challenge him. It will not be fun.
No, Robot Coon. Don't do it.
Oh, dear. Yeah, there's a few other bits, I think.
Then Perfect Plate introduced faux hero Pascal, and the joke is basically that you've got this Pascal who doesn't look like Pascal because he's got a different face.
He's got a different nose and eyes.
And this kid doesn't believe that he is hero Pascal, and so keeps on making him do things. And his pride makes him keep on getting into all sorts of binds because of this.
Mm.
And eventually gets beaten up by... cool Pascal Dark.
Who thinks that he's transformed similarly.
Yes.
The way he did. Yeah.
The joke is just the weird character design. And then the hieroglyphics bit is completely lost on me. I've no idea. I was like, does this work better on the page and in Japanese? Because I really don't get where the joke is.
It's really kind of...
I kind of like the hand signal ones that the robot did. I've not really gone on the hieroglyphics lessons, yeah.
I'm getting a little, the less enthused by the Perfect Plates as well. As long as the first bit is good, I'll watch it all the way through. But it's like, the other two, if there are two more, seem like a kind of chore.
They tend to be the weaker side of it mostly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then,
I think the only joke I liked in The Perfect Plate was the fact that both of them signed their names with a poop.
Oh,
on
yes,
the end.
That's the way you could tell that he was the fake hero, not that he didn't look like him at all.
Yeah, sorry.
Next up, we got Ninja Girl and Samurai Master. I actually wrote notes this time, and I was like, boy, a lot of things happened in this tiny cartoon.
God damn it, dude. It's so much to keep track of.
So, we learned that Nobunaga's sister has got two children now, and the other guy
is
horrified that she's a woman. Hattori Hanzo and Tokugawa Ieyasu show up, and Saru is sort of trying to get Hanzo killed, basically, because he sees him as some sort of romantic challenge to him.
He's a cool dude, ninja.
Yes, even though Chidori has shown no inclination towards romance in the slightest.
Yeah.
And so what's his plan? To strap loads of bombs to yourself and and run
at the enemy. Yes. Yeah.
What's the old guy's name? The dirty old man?
Masahide?
Yeah, that's him, yes. Dangerous old man is the note I've written down. Yes, he's like wandering around in the gardens. It's like a perfect weather or perfect season for a betrayal, he says.
It's like, spring. It's a beautiful day out. Might get a bit of betraying going. And I think someone reacts that he said that out loud or something like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then Nobunaga's planning on moving on Muto, but we learn that the real target is Asakura Yoshikage.
Yeah. Everyone's kind of reacting to, it's like, that's weird the way he's getting another army to invade this little fucking place. He could probably do it himself. It's like, mm-mm.
No. Who is allied with Nobunaga's brother-in-law.
Mm.
So this is the lead up to the Battle of Anigawa. Which I believe may be the point that one of the characters will die.
Oh dear.
No.
However, said that is a character we've not seen for a while, so maybe they just gradually fade him into the background.
We'll just see the cast get smaller and smaller. It's like, hey, where's Nobunaga? What happened to him? Who knows?
Oh, not Nobunaga. I'm pretty sure he'll stick around for a good while.
Yes. Yeah, he's around for 12 more years, I think.
What I'm saying is eventually he's going to fade out of the cast. So it's just Chidori going like, where's all my friends? That's sad.
Well, he all died of old age because you're seemingly immortal.
Sure.
Yeah, so this is kind of like the first time where you kind of get some of the treacherous nature of Nobunaga coming in.
I wondered if like Chidori's going to even react to that stuff, because she's always like, oh, he's so brave and he wants to unite everyone and he's great.
Well, yeah,
like, she'll stick with him because she realizes that, from before that, he's fighting against, this century of madness we've been living in. He's going to put an end to it.
But is the treachery going to put her off, is what I'm saying.
Well, we know what's going to be
she's a ninja!
Yeah, we know what the troublesome... They've already told us when the bit which is going to bring problems to her has been highlighted in the bit where they say that we hope the series lasts long enough for us to tell this story.
Right.
Because eventually Nobunaga's going to go against her home.
Mm.
So she's going to have to be drawn between duty and family.
Mm.
But yeah, it was like, oh, there's a lot of stuff happening in this. And also, I have to refer to Wikipedia to find out who some of these people are.
Mm. I think I had the thumbnail and title like on the Crunchyroll page, because it has like the shogun there going kind of with his like finger to his lips, or facing out of his mouth, but facing out to his face, and going, it feels like something's about to happen, but I don't know why what. good choice.
Right, on to the big boys. And no Attack on Titan. We didn't watch any more Vrains. So, but Haybot was back.
Hey.
Haybot, my baby's back. When all 12 are together, things get serious. This is a lie. I watched this while I was very tired on Sunday morning, and I'm not entirely sure I understand exactly what was going on. And I don't think it mattered, because the brother character said at the end, well, this will all get retconned in the next episode, by the time the next episode comes around, so... Don't worry about it. But what it basically boiled down to is, ignore the title. All 12 did come together. They caused some trouble right at the start. But then it boils down to a competition between the main characters to decide who's going to be the main character. And the ones who loses will be sent to hell to be reset. And then also... all what are called the failed characters, and now these aren't the characters who we found on the island who were designs which didn't make it into the anime. These are like all the weird random characters who show up in those scenes which don't connect to the story at all throughout the series.
Right.
And they have a competition to see who's going to get promoted into being a main character. And meanwhile, the Mocath Trio are like the commentary on all this happening.
they're happy enough with their position.
Well, two of them are happy enough with their position. Catherine okay. is not happy with them being happy with their position. Mm. And I can't... I think at the end everyone gets sent to hell, regardless of whether they won or lost. And it doesn't matter because next week the mum character finally shows up and presumably, as predicted, it'll start moving the plot which has been in the background into the foreground.
And this is the lady with like the fists for hair.
That is correct, yes.
Mm.
And so presumably in the last quarter of the series it will actually move towards some sort of finale. I should probably watch this again more wide awake and hopefully it'll make more sense. But it was really hard going with how tired I was Sunday morning.
Sounds madder than usual.
Thing is, it didn't, but it just seemed hard to get a handle on what... I'm sure there was parodies I was completely missing out on.
Mm.
Anyway, something which I could get a handle on Sunday morning a little bit later was Tiger Mask Double. Episode 37... Farewell, Tiger.
Which why are we the best thing that was on this week?
I think you might be right. Anyway. Yeah. It's definitely all the episodes where the animation's been a bit janky were all made up for in the final fight.
Hmm. We're going to see a lot of sweet flips and stuff.
Yeah. And well, not just that, a man's head crumpling between another man's legs.
You can just say another man's thighs, it's fine.
Or it's his knee and shin, I think, to be technically.
Yeah.
Before we get to that, though, we got to settle the final match of the standard series, you know, which is Miracle One versus Okada. And Miracle One is putting out all the dirty tricks, doing item one, the poison breath of all things, to blind Okada. And like, oh, what's he going to do now? But Okada handily wins it, was fine, but he hurts his arm in the process. So he can't be the one that they have in for the final six tiebreaker match. Who else can we get? Because maybe there was a wrestler lying around, also the Tiger Mask, to fight the other Tiger Mask guy.
Well, we got your man, but he's only got half his mask. We can't use him because he doesn't have a full mask. He can't wrestle without the mask, surely.
Mm-hmm.
I guess.
Hannah was like, leave it to me. I've got an idea. And then we go out. I'm going to get everyone up for the big main last fight of the series. And it's like on a GWM side, Tiger the Great the Third. And then there's over on the other side, it's like, looks like Tiger Mask from the feet up there. But who is this? And Hannah has gone down to the commentator stand and look from, hey, it's Tiger Mask Double. What? Tiger Mask Double. It's a double. It's like a double. You see what I mean? Okay, let's introduce him anyway. Then it lights go up and it's like, oh, it's composite Tiger Mask. You have like half of the regular Tiger Mask and half of the Tiger the Dark Mask like sits together to make kind of, Tiger Mask Double. It's cool.
I thought he was just going to wear your man's mask underneath his mask so his mask would have like the hole would show through the thing. But you actually just really badly stapled them together.
Pretty well for yeah. a rush
I mean,
job.
Like,
that was
for
pretty
a rush
good.
Job, it's very good, but yeah, it's very clearly a rush job, is what I'm saying.
Also, very intimidating to see a guy with a stitch down the whole middle of his face. It's like, oh, I'll put some heebie-jeebies up him. Yeah, and Takuma was like, I had my shot. You go get him now. So show him what's what. Who's the real tiger around here? And then proceed to have a fucking awesome wrestling match for the remainder of the episode.
Yeah. I think there's some shots in here which seem... I didn't double check, but they felt like straight out of the original Tiger Mask opening.
Okay. I thought they were doing some of the moves from their opening as well. Like.
Yes, I think. Yeah, and obviously he uses everybody's... He uses both his moves and Takuma's moves.
Because he's double.
Yes.
Yes.
No, he doesn't use the crossbow, I don't think, does he?
Well, he'd just seen that one.
Yeah, that's true, yes.
Well, I guess it's kind of fitting that he has this kind of, he's using the moves of the other guys he's had, because you have Tiger the Great, the Third, doing his own stuff, but also doing all the Yellow Devil moves that he used to.
Yeah.
Mm.
Which then Naoto kicks out of everything that Tiger the Great the Third does to him.
Yeah, it was like really put me kind of back to years ago when I was kind of watching wrestling regularly, and it's like, you know, I was shouting at the TV, saying, come on, kick out the shoulder up, come on. I know he's going to win, but it's like, and then I'm like, he's gearing up to do the fucking big final moves to fucking finish off Tiger the Grey. It's like, fun, that's it, fucking finish him off, put him on the fucking ground. It's like, I was shouting at the TV. Like, this is like most excited I've been, like, well, I've been excited at this recently, but, you know, as well. But this really kind of got me out of my seat, for lack of a better term. Really getting up in there, like, and then, like, when this was all said and done, I actually went and watched a bunch of New Japan Pro Wrestling clips, which I hadn't really invented before. But, yeah, I just kind of, I need more of this right now.
Well, watch a bunch of good news, Niles. G1 season coming up, so now's the time to get onto New Japan World and watch a massive amount of wrestling in a month. More wrestling than you'll have time to watch.
G1 wrestling, you say, stares in the camera.
Yeah, they just announced the blocks. They haven't so they know there's 20 wrestlers in two blocks of 10. Some of which you'll recognise from this, some of which you'll recognise from crowd scenes in this episode, as they snuck a load of wrestlers they hadn't been able to put in yet.
I was going to say, those are specific people, right?
Yeah, and I think there's some other people who aren't New Japan people snuck in there as well.
Yeah, yeah. I figure either friends of the show or celebrities or something like that. Yeah.
Just fun to watch the match. There's so much happens going on. It takes up like pretty much the majority of the middle part of the episode. Like, it just keeps on going on, and like any good wrestling match should do. It's the thing is about to come to an end. There's another spurt of energy, and it just keeps on going back and forth. This move is going to finish off the villain. Nope, he kicks out of that one as well. It's like, what the fuck? Let's go down.
Classic stuff. And also, when you think the series is over, it kicks out and it's got another episode next week.
I know.
Yeah.
Now, I agree with you. I think a fucking victory episode is a really good way to do a show.
Yeah, because it's like, just like Classic Lloyd. It's like, yes, you've had the final episode, but now we're going to do an encore.
Yes.
But before we get to that, though, we've got the great bit where all the love interests show up at the airport.
That was the best! That was the fucking best, dude. Because I still don't know if Haruna is into Naoto or the physiotherapist, if she's into one or the other. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, I think she was crying out for Takuma, and I think...
Specifically,
if she's gone to the airport, that's... There's probably more romantic involvement, whereas Haruna, it might be just like, where the hell are you going?
I love the reporter coming up. It's like, which one are you interested in? And they're both shouting. And she's like, both of them. It's like, you greedy motherfucker.
No, for an interview.
And the best part.
And then, just to cap on that, they all meet each other. And then, running in the background, is Kevin screaming, Takuma, where are you?
That's the fucking icing on the fucking cake, man. It's beautiful. Like, they're absolutely saying that was the case with him.
Yes, yes,
poor Kevin.
Of course it is.
Maybe we'll get a Kevin spin-off series. I don't know.
Poor Kevin. Oh, feels so bad for the guy, you know.
Yeah, they're both Tiger Mask double. One is
except one's in the US and one's in Mexico?
Yes.
Yep. Now, of course, in Mexico, wrestling with the Sabo 10 and his mama.
Yes, yes.
And then Takuma goes to America, and Odin is back. He's back from Kansas, wherever he was.
Yeah, presumably in his hometown, wherever he went.
Yes, because he's wrestling in a barn.
Yeah, yeah, old school.
But yeah, that was I really like seeing Odin there as well.
Mm.
But then Miss X comes up looking for
Haruna,
and they need her for something.
Yeah, like, you know what? Everything seemed the same thing when she brought it up on scene. Which one is she into? Just here, but an entirely different reason altogether.
Yeah, there's some good stuff with her as well, being really mocking of Mr. X.
Oh, I was.
Yeah, it's like, here's the towel. Why do I want a towel? Because you need to throw the towel in, because the third's about to get his ass handed to him. good stuff, because it hadn't been taken out of her hands or her control. It was kind of like, yeah, you fucked this one up. Way to go.
Yeah, so looking forward to next week's episode. And, yeah, so G1 Climax runs from July 17th to August the 13th. Oh, and there was the other scene with Ibushi returning to New Japan.
All he does is pop in and goes like, hey, Tiger Mask should wrestle. Like, really? On his own show? You think so?
But yeah, but no, it's kind of like, I like the thing, oh no, it seems like a while you've been gone. I've not been gone that long, as if, like, wink, I've been Tiger Mask double.
Yeah.
In the actual live shows. But yes, he's back in the G1 Climax.
Okay.
So, he's not a New Japan wrestler, he's like an independent. Because he wants to do things at his own pace and have the option to do weird things like wrestle giant monsters in films.
Who wouldn't?
Who wouldn't, nice. Yes. But yeah, I shall be looking forward to the real wrestling as well. I could watch them tonight. There was a show today.
Ooh.
Righty-ho. And hopefully, I mean, would you like to see this come back? I mean, I think I would.
I feel like there's more potential for crazy wrestlers.
Yes.
And the standard wrestling side plots of, like, drama and whatnot.
Fighting sweets.
Yeah. And there's loads of there's loads of guys they've not shown from New Japan as well.
Hmm.
Hmm. It would have to be like a, you know, I don't know, some kind of new villainous thing, though, because they have another shot and they're kind of mirroring the decline that Tiger Mask's training camp at the base of Mount Fuji is, you know, has fallen into ruin. Then we see like the winged tiger or Tiger's Den statue has just been all overgrown, covered in moss and ivy above the peak. It's like, haha, yes, they're buried, they're dead for now.
Well, they bring back the villains from Tiger Mask 2.
Yeah.
Universal Wrestling Federation, I think they were called. Righty-ho, on to My Hero Academia, episode 26, Time to Pick Some Names. A drastic gear shift in the pacing of this show, which I think, I was thinking about this, I was like, oh yeah, the next 25, 26 episodes, however they're doing, going to be really different to the first half of this season.
Yeah, I think it might have needed that little breather of this episode in between the two. So I'm not really like complaining about it or anything. So,
so yes, they have to go and pick their names. I thought there was some good added stuff in this and some bad added stuff. I think there's some jokes didn't work as well as they did in the comic. Because in the comic, it kind of feels like that Midnight is sort of, and Eraserhead is kind of like, oh, he picked his dumb name, whereas we see in this that Present Mike picked his dumb name and he just went along with it.
I kind of like the idea that they were mates from back in school. They're old school chums.
It is.
Except for Eraserhead, who isn't really friends with anyone.
Yeah, but in the comic it feels like he's brought her in because he's no judge of a good name, because he's got a stupid, he picked a stupid name for himself.
I just thought he was a Lynch fan.
Yeah.
But the other good, the thing which wasn't in the comic is the bit where you've got the first few names being really stupid and then them all going, now it feels like we've got to say a stupid name as well.
Yeah, the kind of thing was like, oh, are we joking now? We have to do joke names. Okay. And the pressure is taken off by Froppy, who we will now call Froppy because it's an excellent name.
Oh, I see. I'm not that big a fan of that name.
What? What are you talking about?
It's better than Uravity.
I think Uravity is a good name too. I think most of these names are pretty great.
Uravity does sound. I'd like to have the name of a new model car, though. Nissan Uravity, or the superhero on the go who doesn't have super speed.
I like that way she's sticking her name in there so she can copyright her own shit. Like, she can't copyright the word gravity.
It's Uravity. It's different. Yeah. Didn't get everyone, like, this whole class is bursting in a cheer spontaneously going, Froppy, Froppy. I just, like, is it a fun word to say? They're all the kids and they're going, yeah, Froppy, 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 Froppy.
I think their excuse is that she's met it like, oh, okay, we actually have to pick good names.
Hold on.
I'm trying to think who else got a good name.
Of course, Bakugo is having trouble because he's going, I'm King Explosion Murder.
Mashi Rao, of course, goes for Tailman because that's as plain as he is.
Yep, pretty good.
Hunter's. I did like the way that.
Yeah, cellophane, because nice and simple, to the point. But I like the way the way they've written on the on their are they cards or whiteboard? I'm not entirely sure.
Whiteboard, yeah.
Yeah, but they all have like a different handwriting. That was a nice. That was much different from the comic, right?
Yes. I can't remember. Well, it probably was because they were probably.
I feel like Bakugo had the angry writing in the comic, but other than that, everyone else had just.
I was going to say probably in the original comic it was fine, but then when they. Translated
right,
it, they
right,
probably
right.
didn't keep different handwritings. Because Midoriya's handwriting is pretty terrible in this.
He's always nervous.
Also, I'm guessing he wasn't left-handed. His right hand is way more busted. Yeah. So he
oh, that's true. And
he
also,
passed,
he was doing his...
Scroll it.
He was also doing his air seat as well.
Because he's been shaking all day.
He's not sitting on his chair. He's lifting himself up slightly above it.
He's got to do the muscle training. What does the bird guy go with? Like, it's
Tsukuyomi.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
It's a good name. I think he had that picked out in advance. All right. Sweets man is the only indication to that guy's power, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
Mina just goes for Pinky, which is more like.
She wants to go with Alien Queen, yeah. But that's a dumb name. Or at least Midnight doesn't like it because it's not cute, I think, is her problem.
Yes.
Damn it, I'm trying to remember all the names they went through.
Yeah, between this and Dragon Ball Super, it's going to be a lot of
there's a lot of guys.
Names to remember now. They all kind of got to me like, on the same day. I was like, oh, why did I watch these two in a row?
Wasn't Yuga's "I Cannot Stop Shining," which he was made to bring down to
"Can't
Stop
Shining."
Can't
Stop Shining, as in like that. You can't have a sentence as a name.
Embrace the conjunction.
Then they give out to him because he keeps switching between English and French. yeah, no, there's some good bits in this. Like just a lot of sight gags and people reacting to them, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And yeah,
the other side of it is fucking Ida. He's going through some shit right now. Acting like he's fine, and you know, he's kind of says for now, you know, like, Ida, mate, are you okay? If this is about my brother, it's fine. He's okay.
I'm totally fine.
He's doing it fine. I'm okay. But he's
I'm not going
not,
to talk about it.
He's not fine at all. He's totally not fine with it.
Yeah, because his little bit, it gets less comedy for him, where his brother asked him to take his name, because he doesn't think he's going to be capable of walking, not to mention a bunch of other things. Anymore, so he's like, "Hey, take my name off for me." And Ida just goes like, "I'm just gonna go with Ida. Can't quite take the name yet." Yeah,
and they also see which hero companies or how many hero companies were interested in them after the thing.
Yes,
and that they're all going to go on their 1 week work experience.
Oh, and that's you see All Might reacting because some of the requests are coming in late. And the one that's for Midoriya, he just panics.
Yes. so it's for a superhero called Gran Torino, who also knows of his secret. And Midoriya, like, somebody else? I forgot.
He retired, so I forgot he'd like be still a player and people who know your secret. Yeah.
So he goes and sees him and finds him lying down in what appears to be a pool of blood in his house.
He's fine, though. Like it goes, he comes to the door and it's like, "Hello, it's me. Oh my god, he's dead. Oh, I'm alive. Ah, he's alive."
Yeah, the scream being more horrified for him being fine was a good comic touch. But yeah, it looks like Ida's going out for vengeance because he's taken a
less prestigious company, but the one in which his brother was at the same part of town, or the same town his brother was attacked in.
Yes.
At the same time, you know, I'm sad to see he'd ever be kind of fall prey to darker impulses. I was just looking forward to it because Midoriya just kind of loads it everyone and saying, "So we said goodbye to Ida that day." And I should have said something more because I've regretted it ever since. It's like, oh my god, what's going to happen? Like, what's he going to do?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I can't remember how the time thing works because obviously we saw Stain go off with Yamanu turns into the teleporting void.
Yeah.
But numerous days have passed since then. So is he just being hanging out with them all those days?
It might be like a flashback or a flash sideways or whatever you call it. Yeah, yeah. That's probably the way of it.
Because that does seem to be in next week's episode.
It'll probably be those guys reacting now and then talking about that time we talked to Stain, you know, that kind of way.
Oh, yeah, I think you might be right, yes.
Something like that anyway, yeah.
Yes, because that scene is one of my... In fact, I really like Stain as a character, and I like the conversation he's going to have with Shigaraki. So my prediction is this adaptation is going to go up to chapter 69 and a little bit of chapter 70.
Okay, because that's the end of the arc, is it?
So,
do you think that's a decent break point?
That's the break point, because this is a weird arc. Not like the last one where it's the action takes place through the entire arc. This is half the arc is the action, and then the rest of the arc is almost like everybody reacting to what happened in the first half of the arc.
Yeah, yeah.
So the pacing is going to seem really different to the sports day bit, which I think might throw people off a bit if they've attuned themselves to the amount of action they've had up to this point.
Hmm. Do you think it would have been better to have a season break between, or
possibly? But I don't. Again, you've got that overlap with the fact that Aida's brother gets attacked during the tournament.
That's true. Yeah, it's kind of a natural way to tell.
And
the
also,
story.
A lot of the themes of people's motivations for being a hero in that tournament bit play off with
in the next part.
In the next part with Stain and everybody's reactions to Stain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I'm fine. I'm looking forward to more. When comic is being discussed online again some more today, and I thought, I went for digging into reading it because I want to get more of it, but I want to finish this finish, at least finish this adaptation, whatever it finishes first, and then into the comic.
Right.
It's getting harder. Just got to wait a whole week to get a little fix of it. It's like, oh, come on. Also, finally, you know, just in time for you guys to remember his actual name, Kirishima, now I can get around to calling Red Riot like you used to.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be so much easier with Red Riot, Tailman, Froppy. I'm like, oh, I can remember all of these. I have no fucking trouble with these.
Is it grape juice? Is that your
pervert? Yeah, I think that's it. He's really worried he's gonna like drop out because I think he was reacting to like the I think the internet's also reacting in that regard that he's gonna drop out. Getting picked up with the heroes and stuff. Yeah,
he'll get a decent character bit this season. I don't know whether that'll be enough to turn people around on him.
yeah, that's right.
Righty-ho, Rage of Bahamut, Virgin Soul, Episode 12, The Great Escape.
Like, the first half is a pretty sweet prison break. It's a lot of action and fun stuff.
Yes, and less fun stuff above ground.
Yes, then it's countered with the, like, this is some serious shit going down here. And the humans preparing is like, prepare the fucking ballistas. And it's like, guys, are you serious? Or not the trebuchets or whatever the fuck. And I was like, you're being invaded by fucking
heavens.
yeah, pretty much. And those things do them about as well as you fucking expect.
Yeah, and the L2 guys in the Orleans Knights, Diaz seems to be having some sort of crisis of conscience going on here. It's like being attacked by the people he was supposed to be in service of.
Yeah. Like, no, but it's fun. Are we the baddies? Jack JPEG really happening there to him. Yeah, and also that Heaven has like L now right in the front line, just switching off all of their defenses. They just breeze right in. I gotta say, sending that their air force. Chayotia sends in his air force, and it's like it's like dragons, and it's got like a ghost mounted on top of them. Weapon is a hammer. They got, how are you going to swing like a big hammer while you're trying to fly by in a dragon? That doesn't seem like a very practical thing to do.
I'm not exactly sure what the hammer was. I assume there's some magic on it or something.
I don't know. It doesn't matter though because it just gets turned off and they just fall from the stratosphere and they actually become even more deadly that way, because they seem to achieve terminal velocity and start just like basically acting like a meteor shower on it.
So I wasn't sure if that was the dragons crashing into buildings, or was that the warrior fucking angels with the horns just slamming into the place and just wrecking shit?
A little bit of both, I think.
Yeah, probably both.
And as well, playing that, you've got kind of like the ominous, like, you know, score playing, but there's no sound effects. It's like a fun. It's like seeing like a murder montage in a gangster movie. It's just like.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that.
Whereas our main characters are happy because they're breaking out of jail.
Like, everything's from their point of view, like, everything's going pretty fucking grand. Nina only fucking panics when they start shooting the arrows through those magical fields.
Yes, yes.
And stuff, because she could just take the whole prison. I love that when the guys were shooting arrows at them, it was like, don't worry, guys, I'll take care of this, and she's just throwing rocks, and anytime it cuts away from her, there's, like, thousands of rocks being launched at the guards, and they're all retreating. It's pretty great.
And, of course, there's a mine, so therefore you get to have a little ride in a mine cart.
Yeah, I get some Temple of Doom shit going on there.
Which lands
Has there ever been, like, a mine cart where the brake didn't snap off when you're trying to use it?
Well, I think with Nina, that's obviously what's the first thing that's going to happen.
Yes. It's like, I thought, maybe this time, because you're a bomb, it's used to kind of subverting your expectations a little bit. The brake will work for once. No, of course it won't.
Well, the brake was working. Unfortunately, her super strength tore it off.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
I think it was appropriate for Nina, whose super strength helps and also gets in the way. You know?
I suppose they weren't going at full speed when they cleared that gap. So
yeah.
That's true as well. Well, Nina nearly didn't.
Well, the others didn't if they hadn't got her umbrella with them.
Yeah, yeah.
But they end in the men's prison, and they find Favreau and Kaiser. So Favreau tells Kaiser to take his hand off, do various
actions with the fingers,
yes,
and then stand the fuck back, dude.
I'll build you another hand when we get out of here.
Yeah, and the whole thing was like, all right, I want my new hand, it doesn't explode. I want that to say that right now.
Hey, that was Rita, not me. Don't be putting me on this.
I mean, like, I didn't tell you about it because I thought it'd be fucking funny.
Yes, you've been wandering around for 10 years with a bomb on your hand.
Yeah. Oh, and then, like, the two groups were kind of making a run for the lift separately, and then they kind of join up together just right there at the exact same time. And then Favreau and Nita going, it's you!
The delayed reaction of them, yeah.
They're like, we haven't got time for this. Because
they've turned on the device.
Looks like, I'd say, something like a tulip from Nadesco, but then it opens up and it's got the Eye of Volga in it.
Yeah. I didn't know what that was for a while. I thought it was some kind of this wall of magical energy, but it just seemed to be some kind of solid structure.
Because the lads slide in the drill bit that's drilling up to the surface, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. It's like whatever weapon this is, our heroes are kind of stuck on the surface of it.
Hmm.
Yeah. They look like pretty cool to see it kind of just opposed against, you know, this kind of weird, sort of swirling, massive, dark machinery against, like, the halo of light that's, you know, even parting the clouds in the sky on heaven's side. It's like, oh, that's a really cool thing. Screen cap that, desktop background.
Righty ho. Yeah, it was a good episode. Lots of fun action again. And looks like we're going into mid season finale next week.
Mm. I thought it was really good. Like, it was the prison escape I kind of expected it to be, but contrasted with the war, I thought it worked really well.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sort of came to a head in that way a lot sooner than I thought it might. So now I'm kind of wondering what direction it's going to spin off from this. Because someone's got to lose this. I assume heaven, because they don't know what the hell this thing is. The church just popped out of the ground. So,
Like, everyone reacting to him like he's the most evil king ever, but, like, we can't really do anything about it is pretty great. It's like, release the weapon. And it's like, but it's not finished yet, sir. Did I say, should we release the weapon? Or did I say, release the weapon? You know, that kind of thing. I'm wondering, like, and that the fact that the town revolts, well, half the town revolts, like you get religious processions of people giving out, and half the people just fucking leg it out of town, unsurprisingly.
They're going to have a war. Why do they have to have it here? I believe somebody says.
That's where my stuff is.
Righty ho, here we go. Get in there now, Niall. Dragon Ball Super, episode 96. The time is here to the world of void for the fate of the universe. In which we learn that Vegeta does not want to hold Frieza's hand.
I mean, like, who does?
Kill my father and most of my like entire race. I'm still a little sore about that, to be honest.
So yes, we have three of the gods of destruction who aren't taking part. Give the arena a bit of a tryout.
Because they're like, oh, are you sure this thing? It's like, oh yeah, it's a very indestructible material. Go on, give it a lash. And they have a cool fight. And he's like, right, now clean it up before the fucking tournament starts.
Yeah, it's Iwan and Liqueur, and they convince Arak to join in.
Yeah.
The other guy doesn't want to join in.
Yeah, because he says, oh, the results will be obvious.
Yeah.
And it's like, it wasn't like he knows he's going to win. He didn't know that. It's like, he's going to make him clean it up afterwards.
But that was a nice bit of action. And it was good to see like really Gods of Destruction go at each other as well.
Yeah.
I talk for a minute now when we're just kind of zipping around. All I can do is kind of hear him. Like, is that all you're going to get? Is this question is so good, it's too fast for even like the viewers' eyes to see. But no, they pop out there and they're fun throwing stars at each other. It's great.
Yeah, and I think it also gives you a nice taste of battles which aren't just going to be one side versus another side.
Because it was a three-way thing. Yes. Like, any time it became one-on-one, the third guy would intervene and, like, attack both kind of thing. Yeah. And that's what they're kind of suggested as well. Like, because I think it's Gohan and Piccolo, or they're all like, okay, we got to work together as a team. And you know, Goku and Vegeta's like, no, I'm going to fucking fight guys one-on-one. What are you talking about?
No, stop. Don't rush off. Sit together and they say, no, if you're fighting one guy, make sure there's two of you there. If you're fighting two guys, make sure there's three of you there. Everyone's saying, that doesn't sound very fair. So care about fuck about fairness. If we lose, we're all going to die. So.
Vegeta, if we lose this, your children will be erased. And he's like, one-on-one fights is my thing.
But yeah, Gohan and Piccolo are kind of like, oh dear, Goku, Vegeta, and Frieza. There are going to be problems.
African. They're these idiots.
Dear.
Yeah, but they warped there. You know, they all got to hold hands, as you mentioned there. It's like, no, not holding his hand. When like Beerus is going, come on, let's get in there. Okay, I'll hold his hand. You can hold mine. You happy now? Okay.
I love the reaction where Beerus sees another god teleport in. It's like, hey, we didn't need to hold hands to teleport. Like, I thought it would be a team building exercise.
It doesn't help though, because like literally, as soon as they land, it's like Frieza's there, then Frost is like, sup. And they're immediately hiding around the back of the shadow scheme.
the one thing you can hide behind, and they're having a secret conversation. So, if you want to fuck shit up?
Oh yeah, you know I do. Other me?
Oh god.
Yeah, next week's episode.
No other universes brought like alternate versions of themselves.
Next week's episode, One Piece does have Caesar in it, so next week you'll have three Freezers.
Good stuff.
There's
no difference between Frost and Frieza's voice. I know this now that they're having a conversation.
I don't think there's much difference in Caesar's voice, but at least we can get a good comparison next week.
Okay.
So yes, Universe 2. We see Brienne de Chateau, who apparently, according to the wiki, is one of the kamikaze fireballs. And we see the other two of the kamikaze fireballs there as well.
The way magical girls.
They've got a yard rat on their team.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
She's commented on.
Yeah, one of the, I think Goku notices that. We're going to have to watch that fucker.
Yeah, because he's the guy who also knows the instant transfiguration technique. So.
Yep. And then, no one has known that besides Goku so far, so I guess that could make a difference.
Yes. Then we see a short orange man with one green horn, a yellow-skinned old man dressed like Adam Strange, a tall blue man in gold armor, what might be a vampire woman. She's got pale skin.
Looks like it.
Seems to be the suggestion, yeah.
And then there's two large figures in shadow. One which I thought looked a bit like a lion man, and one which looked a bit like a chicken man. I don't know. They are apparently Universe 2, the Gentle Universe.
Hmm.
We'll see about that.
Yeah, we've got Universe 3, the Spiritual Universe, where we've met Negrishi, the guy who looks a bit like a walking stingray, and Narirama, the guy who's designed to avoid being thrown out of the arena.
Oh, this is the robot universe.
Yes. So then we've got a guy who looks a bit like a discarded 80s Gonda Guy robot.
Yeah, they kind of look like different genres of robot stuff. You guy with the monocle being like the
mad scientist.
Yeah.
There's a robot which looks a bit like something Kevin O'Neill would have designed for ABC Warriors. There's a robot that looks a bit like Auto Magetta, but in green. And there's like a big white Cyclops robot. There's that monocled man in a lab coat carrying a cane. There appears to be two superheroes, one with a pea on his chest, one who's got a cape, and a small person made of water.
Yeah, the person made of water is the only one who's not like robotic or supposed to look like that. Because even the guy with the pea, I thought he might be the colors of Kashan.
Oh, what if the guy made of water is that their vert universe of that thing from the earlier arc? Who made a double of Vegeta?
Or that thing.
Oh!
Don't know.
Is that kind of cheap, bringing power water to the thing? I guess you can bring dead people, so there's no real rules.
Then we got Universe 4, the Conspiracy Universe.
Really?
We've got Ganos, who's the green-skinned spy, who this time we see has got bird feet.
I didn't spot the feet.
Yes, we've got a purple woman with fins for ears, a green-skinned woman dressed like a character out of an RPG, a fox.
Wait, is that the one that looks like an orc, yeah?
No, she looks like a Dragon Quest character. She looks like a... There is somebody who looks like a large green orc warrior type thing. There's a small blue spiky thing, a fox man, and a flat-faced dog man, and they say, hang on, they've only brought 8, but they can detect. So apparently
they've got... Yeah, Yamcha says I can detect a slight thing of something else there.
So apparently they've got two members on the team who are either incredibly small or invisible.
I hope they're just small. I think that would be funnier.
Well, apparently there's a insect man called Daemon, according to the wiki, so...
Hmm.
He may be incredibly small, as you say, Dwayne. He might actually just be the size of an insect.
Well, they did specify, like, the gravity is the same. The gravity is that no one can fly.
Yes.
Except for people who have wings, because that's legal.
Yeah.
And gravity is the exact same as it would be on your home planet?
Yeah.
So maybe he's from, like, a super high gravity thing. So he's a bug, but he's really strong here, that kind of idea.
Well, the question I got from that is that it's, I don't know, tailored on the fly for each fighter so they can fight under ID conditions. Because, you know, this is the world realm of the gods. They can do whatever they want. So everybody has an ideal playing field to ID conditions to work in. But that's the impression I got, anyway.
Yeah. I figured it might explain some of the weirder guys and how they work in this place.
Universe 6, the Challenging Universe. We've got Hit. We've got Kaba. We've got Frost. We've got Botamo. We've got Auto Magetta, we've got Cauliflower, we've got Kale.
More.
The little red guy.
A small red pig man, and two people we see in shadow behind Hit.
Yeah.
Goku tries to make friends with Cauliflower, and she's not having any of it.
Because he's like, wow, female Saiyans, never heard of that before.
And he's like, is this one a Saiyan as well? And then Kale gets even shyer.
Yeah.
Then we got Universe 7, our universe. We know what was in that team.
Our heroes, for lack of a better term. They all get a good shot.
Universe 9, the improvised universe, apparently. We've got Basil, Lavender, and Bergamer, our Foxmen friends.
They managed to get a team together, at least.
Yes, they've got a purple rock man, a red-skinned man, a white rabbit woman, a goth cat girl, a dragon man, a bat man, and some kind of creature from the Black Lagoon type.
Yeah, the only one I can't figure is the red dude. Like, cause the rest of them look like animals or monsters or something.
Or something that King Piccolo would give birth to.
Yeah.
Actually, well, wait, I guess the Rockman isn't...
No, but the Dragon Man, the Batman, and the creature from the Black Lagoon type are kind of variations on Piccolo's children. Then we got Universe 10, the Macho Universe.
Where we've got... They look pretty decent, actually.
Yes, they look a lot like Street Fighter characters, some of them. We've got Murachim, who we've met before, the big pink muscle man. They've got a parrot man on their team. They've got a fairy.
And the butterfly lady. Yes. Yeah.
They've got a pig sumo wrestler. A red-skinned man with a high hairline. There's like a blue llama martial artist.
Yeah.
A red-skinned kickboxer. Sagat from Street Fighter.
Yep.
Some sort of crab man and a blue-haired dandy carrying a rose.
Yeah, who's pirouetting in. I thought he looked like, I mean, like, it's probably just because, you know, there's a few Toriyama haircuts to keep the recirculating. What was that green dude who was on Namek? I thought he might be that guy.
You're going to have to narrow it down.
Sorry. He was a light green guy on Namek. He was one of Frieza's guys.
Oh, Zarbon.
Yeah, I thought he might be like a fancier Zarbon, if that's such a thing.
His species in this universe, you know, if he turns into some kind of monster frog man, then we'll know.
I guess that'll give it away, sure.
I thought he was like Cavendish out of One Piece.
Dandy lady killer pirate type of job.
Mm.
And then finally we've got Universe 11, the Justice Universe.
All Power Rangers.
All Pride Troopers.
Yes.
they have the multicolored explosion when they do all their simultaneous poses.
Yeah. That was great.
We got Toppo, who is not having any of Goku. Goku's like, great.
Trying to be friendly.
We could finish the fight we started. I'm really not interested. We just want to save our universe.
See, Goku's like, all like, hey, we're having the tournament. Hey, how's it going, buddy? Hey, you know, he's trying to be nice, but it's like, dude, people will die because of you.
You don't get it, do you?
We got Jiren the Grey, who is so good. He does not even have to. He can tell where things are going without looking at them or turning around or even moving.
Mm. Yeah, kind of one of the first guys in a while. Geez, again, in a long time, where Goku seems to be like genuinely kind of taken aback by how quickly he can move, because he's just talking to the guy and then he's just behind him and Jiren says, "Get lost, get out of here."
We got Dispo, the purple, possibly same race as Beerus, possibly not.
The Colonel.
Yes, Carl Serral, Cyborg in a beret. We've got what appears to be Batmite, a very tiny member of the team.
He does look like Batmite.
We've got Bosk. And then there's Green Alien, Blue Man, Purple Woman. That's it. Those are our competitors. Will everyone
when
get
it
a
said
name?
The amount of fighters, I was kind of like, oh yeah, I forgot there's actually a lot of motherfuckers in this.
Yes. Question is, will everyone get a name?
Presumably the guys who are going to get like knocked out really early into it aren't going to get names.
They'll probably get names in a magazine somewhere. Yeah. But yes. We don't know whether anyone's going to be calling the action, though. Maybe someone will be saying, oh my god, such and such has been knocked out. Might get reactions from all different Kais and Gods of Destruction. But I suspect we're going to get some sort of skullduggery from Frieza and Frost. And maybe
they're going to team up, potentially.
It's like maybe the tournament will not actually get completed at all.
And they'll have to redo it.
Or all the good guys will have to team up to fight.
Two Friezas
who've stolen the powers of gods or something.
That does seem to be Frieza's endgame, get more involved in the world of gods. Oh, what was that?
I don't know. He seems to have spotted, here's a way I can get even more powerful.
Yeah, because that's his thing to Frost. It's like, hey, you like getting powerful? I love getting powerful, I'm you! Yeah.
Which, of course, is also Goku's, but Goku wants to do it by fighting more powerful people. Whereas Frieza seems to be like, I want to get more powerful first and then beat up people less powerful than me. Right. That's it for this week's episode of Let's Go. But hang on. Is there anything starting for next week that we should be aware of? Me and Anthony have done a preview episode of Dynamite in the Brain. So we've gone through every single thing that's coming out. We've done the work for us. And I was like, remembered like why we stopped doing that. But so coming up, so next week's will be the 26th of June to the 2nd of July. So we've got Kakegurui, how you pronounce it, Niall? You're a fan of this. Give us the pronunciation. The gambling show. Niall? Are you there, Niall?
Well, maybe the noise I heard, it was Niall dropping off.
It could have been Niall dropping off, yes. Okay, well, that gambling show that Niall's into is a thing we could be watching next week if it's available.
It's still not definitely available.
No, I think
possibly available anyway.
They've announced that Welcome to the Ballroom is going to be on Amazon Prime.
Ooh.
And something is already on Crunchyroll, like weeks early.
Right.
But I watched 5 minutes of it and don't bother.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't on our radar anyway. I just watched it out of curiosity because it was.
If you want to talk about it next week, we can watch it to say no.
No, if you want to hear about it, listen to the Dynamite in the Brain episode.
Okay.
There's not much to say. Yeah, I think that it's Hina Logic from Look and Logic. It's a Look and Logic spin-off. So, yeah, for 2nd of July, we've got that gambling show, Knights and Magic. It's a D&D light novel thing. Not interested. The fourth season of Symphogear, not watched the first three. Fate Apocrypha. See if Niall was... Oh, hang on. Here's... Niall can't hear us too. You look... I mean, this is really great radio. Like you've dropped out the call.
Like, his name's still in the call, but I'm not seeing the...
Yes, you're grayed out. Then we got Katsugeki Token Ranbo, which is that pretty boy swordsman card game. So I think the only thing which we might be watching next week is the gambling show.
Okay.
Because not too much for sure. Yeah, it'll be the following week when we have... lots of stuff. Righty-ho. I think we'll wrap up here and then we'll add Niall back. Hopefully Niall will be back on the next episode. Eddie, do you know anything was coming up on Speaker of the Sailor Madness? Is your 150 episode will be coming out?
Still haven't pinned down when we're going to record it. But yeah, Justice League for episode 150. I know soon after that we should be doing Clone High. That should be a good one. Coming out sometime, I assume, like earlier this month or something.
Yeah, and
if we can manage it,
we will definitely actually have Ganso. I flipped them around, the preview episode and the Ganso episode.
So
it will be Ganso next week on Dynamite in the Brain, and then after that, it'll be all of us for Little Witch Academia when we finally figure out a time to record it.
That seems to be the problem. Yeah,
it's a bit of a struggle. Okay, we'll be back next week with this. Goodbye.
Bye.